Now, where am I in my sheet? Let's see. Let's keep going here, all right? Just a few more things and then you can go. Travel tip. You need to make sure you and your spouse are using the same map. It's very important, moms and dads, that you're on the same page, that you're using the same roadmap, that you're aiming at the same objectives. Critical point. Your target stays the same. So using your compass, you regularly reassess and make adjustments when necessary so you don't stray off course millions of miles. Let me give you a classic example to this. When my daughter, particularly my oldest daughter, Celeste is not ultra sanguine. She's probably half choleric, half sanguine. So we can butt heads from time to time, she and I. But we're still very close, and I love her dearly. When she hit about 13, 14 years old, all of a sudden, my taste in clothing wasn't good enough anymore. Now, I'm a pretty good dresser. Most of you know that. At least some of you have commented on that. Maybe you don't think that anymore. I stay usually pretty youthful, pretty on the cutting edge of the trends. But of course, for all those years, I've been dressing them. Let's face it. You know, I do the shop and I go to the Gap with them, say, that would be good. Oh, that would be good. Oh, Dad, I like this. Oh, that. That's okay. Go ahead. Now, all of a sudden, my taste isn't good enough anymore. So she started wearing things that none of them were immodest. I just didn't like them. like bell bottoms. Oh, man, why does someone come back with bell bottoms? Oh, geez. Bell bottoms are fine if you're 5'9", 5'8", 5'10", and you're long and sleek. I'm just giving you my opinion, by the way. I'm not trying to hurt nobody's feelings here. This is just how my mind works, you know. But Celeste, sweetheart, you're 5'2". You know, you're 5'2". These pair that you bought them from, these look really cool on you. Man, it just didn't go over. And I was really frustrated. One day, my kids know they can do this. This is another thing I'll get to, maybe, if I have enough time. I've told them that, you know, any time that anything's ever bothering you, you can come and tell me. It's about me, if it's about life, it's about anything. And I regularly will ask them, is there anything I'm doing right now that's bothering you? So this particular day I did. Celeste just started crying, just right on the spot. She's not a super emotional girl. Ooh, I hit a raw nerve. I said, okay, honey, what's wrong? You, Dad. I said, me? She goes, you, Dad. I just feel like I can never make you happy. Every day you've got an opinion on my clothes or my hair. She was right. I do. And if she'd only do what I tell her, everything would be fine. That's exactly what I was thinking. You know? When they were five, I was that authoritative. I have to admit to you, it was like pulling out my fingernails by the roots with pliers to shut my mouth. But I had to do it. I had to reassess, and I realized if I keep pushing, we're going to not end up on the planet that I want to be on. We're going to be a million miles off, and she's going to despise the very dad who's loved her for years because Dad won't shut his mouth over things that really don't matter. That was very hard for me. Because to me, they did matter. You follow what I'm saying? You must have that sensitivity that says, God, I'm willing to learn. Okay, I'm willing to be smacked, hit me with a 2x4. I'm willing to have my eyes opened. I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to readjust. So I began to realize, okay, that's not an important thing. What is important? Okay, aim at that. Aim at that. That's what I mean by reassessing. Okay? Number two, how are you going to get there? What things must be done to make sure you achieve what you have begun? What tools are you going to use? Okay? I already talked about my prime objective. I want to go to the last point to ponder. If foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, discipline will help remove the foolishness and replace it with wisdom. Proverbs says a rebuke goes deeper to the heart of a wise person than 100 lashes to the back of a fool. The Bible says that a wise person loves to be instructed, but the self-sufficient fool falls flat on their face. As my children got older, I believed that words, rebuke, correction, instruction, and advice would be needed to discipline their life. So far, that has proven true. I call this coachability. The difference between a great player and a mediocre player, a winner and a loser. The thing that I am most proud of in my children is their obedience, submission, and coachability. That's the truth. I've asked my kids very hard things. I told them way ahead of time they couldn't get their license at 16, and they didn't. They accepted it. I told them why. I don't have time to explain it right now. I'll explain it some other time. They submitted. They didn't come to me every day, "Oh, my friend's got it, Dad. Oh, my friend's got it, Dad." Never said it once. They obeyed. They submitted. They're coachable. I coach them right now on a number of different things. Relationships with the opposite sex. Emails. I read my son's emails. He knows I have the password, and he knows I keep him accountable. I want to make very sure that my young son and my daughter understand clearly how and how not to write to the opposite sex. Words are very powerful to women, and I've expressed that to my son. "You don't answer these letters, son. Love, Jeremy." I don't care how many girls answer their letters. That's how they all write to him. Don't you dare do that until you mean it, until she's the one. See, it's not fair to her. You can say, "Your friend always," or "a brother in Christ," or some other salutation that we'll come up with together. But don't you write, "Love, Jeremy." I've told it to my daughter. And when they were first doing this, when they were about 15 or 16, they'd get letters before we had email, and I'd read the letters. They said, "Wow, you got a letter? Cool, let me read it. Dad, let me read your letter. If you're ashamed to let me read your letter, then I'm really concerned, right? Then I'm really concerned, son. Listen, it's great with me you've got friends of the opposite sex. I don't mind. I want to be able to coach you so that you don't have some girl madly in love with you and you're wondering what's going on. How come she keeps calling me, Dad? I didn't do nothing." Sure you did. You did everything wrong. That's what you did. You sent her all these signals that you liked her. You didn't mean to. Now she thinks you like her. Same is true with my daughter. And do you need to do that with your child? No. Some of you are going to think I'm just an ogre. I don't care. You know me, they know me, I love them, we have a very close relationship. You have to pick your battles. That may not be your battle. I want my kids to be awesome in everything they attempt in their life. I want them to be able to excel, and so I know that the greatest pitfalls people have are particularly relational, and particularly the opposite sex. So that's why I get involved in there. And I don't laugh at them, I don't put them down, we just talk. We interact. I want them to have great relationships with guys and girls. And so far, they're learning. Let's go to the page on page 12, a parenting project worksheet. I guess I'm going to need to comment on number 2 so you can know what I mean. I want to share with you some of the tools of my trade, okay? Everything that I do with my wife, everything, has been thought out before I do it. I don't have one wasted relationship. My hobbies are the will of God, the people of God. Now, if I need to golf because this guy's got potential leadership ability and or wants to get saved, I'll golf. And I hate golf, but I've done it. I've done it. If I got to fish, I'll fish. But I've never, ever in my Christian life fished to fish. I don't have time for that. I've never, ever in my Christian life just gone out and said, "Oh, let's see, how can I do just for fun?" It's always, okay, I'll mountain bike with Kathy. Does it build our relationship, or are we getting some exercise? If we're not doing both, let's find something else. At least if we're going to do an athletic event. Otherwise, it's, okay, we're going to go on a date. I was telling this to a friend recently. Managing your family is really not very hard at all, okay? I was visiting with one of our staff guys the other day. And we were talking about this family. He said, "Mark, I'm not sure, how to balance all my commitment to this and then this and then still have time for my family and my kids." And I kind of smiled and I said, because I'm the one who's given him a lot of responsibilities. And I said, "Brother," I said, "listen, I happen to know what's on your plate. And it isn't that much. It isn't that much. The key is working smart. See, let me show you how I build my wife, okay? I can't possibly spend 3 hours every day with my wife. There's a world to reach. Kathy got married to me because she knew she'd always have to share me with the world. I'm not hers, I'm God's. And she's not mine, she's God's." So I said, "Here's my secret. Let's say I'm, I happen to work at home at this time in my life, but I didn't always. But I always tried to apply these things. Let's say I'm walking up, and I'm walking through the kitchen. Kathy's washing dishes, and I might say, "How you doing, sweetheart?" "Oh, I'm all right." That is a normal Kathy response. "Well, sweetheart," I said, "are you feeling okay?" "I don't know. I just feel kind of tired." "Well, sweetheart, is there anything I can do for you? Would you like a cappuccino? I can run over and get you another one, because I always get one every morning at Super America. You know, do you need a back rub or anything?" "No, sometimes you may say, just give me a hug." Okay, my wife doesn't say that kind of stuff very often, but occasionally she does. And I'll just go over and kind of pat her back, and I said, "You know what I just did, bro? I just did what you think takes 2 hours. I capitalized on a moment, and I just got a lot of brownie points." See, men, you got to kind of help them understand it in a point system, and then they get it. Ladies, okay, I'm not trying to brown nose. I really care about my wife. But I said, "You know what, brother? Do you know what I just did? That took me 1 minute of my time. 2 minutes of time. But because, see, you can't, how do I say it? Guys, you got to get this, okay? You can plan a kitchen remodeling project. You can plan your yard work. You can't plan relationships. Don't you understand that by now? They are completely, always inconvenient. The child needs you always at the worst possible time. Your wife starts to cry at the worst possible moment. It's never convenient. If you learn that and work within those parameters, you're going to be fine. So what you do, you see, is you give her that 3 minutes. You walk away and you know what your wife's thinking? "Wow, he's so thoughtful. That was really nice. He took a little time. Golly, it cost you 3 stinking minutes. That's how I get away with the pace that I live. Many people have told me, "Mark, you live more single than you do married." It's true, I do. I'm going, 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 going all the time. Never neglecting my family, but I never neglect the strategic touches. For example, let's suppose, this is why I get to every meeting early, why I'm always ready for a meeting 1 hour before I go, because you never know what will come up before you leave. So, you're all ready. Let's say that you're headed out to a meeting, and you're supposed to be there at 7. And you're getting ready to leave at about 6:30, 20 to 7. And your wife comes running out to the car. "Honey, the toilet, it's overflowing. Water's going everywhere." Here's what some of you would do based on the way you treat your relationships. "You know, honey, just let the water run. I'll get it when I get home." And that's the truth. "I don't have time for that right now. I'm sorry. I don't have time to deal with the kid. I don't have time to deal with you. I got places to go and people to see." Wrong. That's your problem. You know what you guys would do? You'd get out of the car, run lickety-split, be pen, get the plunger, get the bucket, and you'd solve the problem now. So what do you do when it's 9:30, you know, and your child says, "Hey, Dad, will you come down and lay by me?" "Well, you know, honey, I'm sorry, I'm out in the garage. I got the spark plugs out, I got the oil to change. You just happened to walk into the bathroom for a minute." "Well, Dad, I really need to talk." "Sweetheart, listen. Hey, we'll do it tomorrow, okay? Tomorrow, I'm sure it's nothing earth-shattering." It's a really nice thing to say to the kid. You know what you do? You know what I do? I go over to the kitchen sink and I wash my hands off and I go sit on a little bed and say, "What's up, sweetheart?" "Oh, Dad, I just wanted you to sit by me." "Hey, how about if I lay down by you?" This is one of the ways I make points to my little 10-year-old, Micah. I lay by him at night. My wife does a lot, but recently I've been doing this and I'll get up to leave after 10 minutes and he'll grab me. "Stay here, Dad. I just like you being here." So I just stay there some more. And sometimes I talk, sometimes we don't. Sometimes I reach over and I rub his hair, I scratch his back. And then sometimes I just tell him, "You know, Micah, I'm so glad, you know, Mommy and I, we didn't know we were going to have a fourth baby. I said, you've been the best present that God's ever given to me. I am so glad God gave you to me for my last child. I'm so proud of you. You're such a thoughtful little kid. You're so kind to your sister. And, you know, and I just tell him stuff like that. Guys, you don't have to go out for 2 hours and throw the baseball. You have to take advantage of the little opportunities every day to touch them. That's how I manage my life. And it's a breeze, not a problem at all. Now, with my wife, we go out on dates fairly often. Sometimes we go to movies, we just sit and stare at the movie. Sometimes we hold hands, sometimes we don't. But when we go out to dinner, which is something we like to do, you know what my secret is? I don't talk. I shut my big fat mouth. And I'll say things to Kathy like, hey, where we're going out, why don't we each bring our journals tonight? Because my wife, she loves her journal. She loves verses. She's been writing verses for 20 years. And she loves to have my attention. See, you know how I'm pacing back and forth? I do this at home. Kathy be sitting and I'll be going, Kathy, and can you believe? I could not believe what, and that's what I do. She hears me plenty. So we go out, and I might say something like, and I get my cup of water and my French fries or whatever, and I say, sweetheart, what have you been learning lately? What's God been showing you? Wow, you just opened the floodgates. And Kathy, who's not very talkative, if you know her, but you get her alone and start talking about what's important to her, and she'll just open up and she'll start sharing, and I'm just eating and looking at her. And, wow, that's really neat. And sometimes, I admit, some of her thoughts, they don't make sense to me. You know? But I don't care. I ask, and I probe. And I don't understand why that particular verse meant a lot to her. But you know what? That's not what's important. What's important is that listening to her, she's getting the picture, means a lot to me. And then, well, say, you want some dessert? Nah. Well, you want to go? Yeah, let's go home. And off we go. Guys, you have to get this. Can I go over the tools now? I'm sorry. Now for the tools. Okay. Here are the tools that I've used to mold my children. Now, here's how this will make sense. I want you to know that all I included in here was genuinely for a sample. They are... Okay, go to this points to ponder. We're going to turn over here. All right. Getting Your Family to Mars, A Practical Guide for Effective Parenting. My life plan and objectives for parenting. Literally, I have this written in a leather book that I carry in my backpack all the time. There are five areas that I wanted, that I believe, for Mark Darling, are the strategic five things that I must give to my children. One day, I was laying in bed and I thought, if I died and I'm dead, what is it absolutely that my children must have? These are the five. The fear of the Lord, number one. And I describe what I mean by the fear of the Lord. Okay? A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Number two, godly character. There is nothing more important to success in life than character. Nothing else can substitute for its lack thereof. So I have the Mark Darling ABCs of character. I didn't get these out of a book. I sat down with a pencil by hand. I wrote down each one, put an alphabet letter by it, and then described what I meant to me for that character quality. Okay? It may not be what you mean, and it may not be the one that's that important to you. Okay? So I don't mean you have to take this and mimic the identical thing. I just laid it out so you'd see how I'm thinking, how you could think. Gives you kind of a pattern to cut your cloth along. The third, winning attitudes and healthy self-esteem. Attitude and healthy. You know, a positive outlook on life based on the Bible, hopeful, full of faith, a can-do attitude, healthy self-esteem. Affirm their uniquenesses. Help them discover their and use their gifts and abilities. Emphasize and affirm their strengths. Help them succeed and learn to handle failure. Show them how God uses for and plan for their weaknesses. Okay? The fourth thing is people skills. To love people like God loves them. Everything we do in life involves people. Everything. And these are the A, B, C, D, E, F. You see F is how to deal with the opposite sex. Very, very important. And so these are the people skills that I want them to have. And number five, leadership skills. I want to raise kids that are influencers, that are leaders. You may not. That's okay. It really is okay. I don't want you looking at that and go, well, this must be the most godly thing in the world. No, these are the five things that I felt based on my worldview, my understanding of the Bible, where God has me, that He wanted me to accomplish. The world and the church desperately need leaders. A, lead by example. They must be before they can lead. They must be able to lead themselves before they can lead others. B, leaders are servants. That's what God's standard is. C, dealing with peer pressure. Stand against it. Become a positive influence for good. D, leaders are influencers. Okay? So those are my five. Now, let me explain the tools, by looking at a point to ponder. And this is a very important point. Again, this is a Mark Darling quote. I wrote it for me, but I'll let you read it. But if it doesn't resonate with you, that's okay. Just be open-minded. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. It's the third one. Hardship is essential for the full development of character. Children who are never forced to face certain daily rigors of life, never forced to sacrifice or forced to stick with hard things, are doomed by their parents to failure and frustration in life. Does that all make sense? Let me hope it makes sense to you. If the year was 1850 and you were mom and dad, here's the bottom line. If you did not give your children character, you signed their death warrant. If your child doesn't have the personal character to get up off their butt and go out in 50 degree below weather and chop the wood that needs to be chopped to keep the family warm, guess what? They're going to die. It didn't take any character to be an American. You just, oh, I'm cold. That didn't take a lot of character. Did you know that in 1850, you never slept through the night? Do you know why you never slept through the night? Because if the fire went out, you died. And you gave people assignments. Sometimes it was Dad for the first 3 hours, then it was the kid, then it was Johnny, then it was Sally. And it was their job to get up and make sure the coals were never allowed to die and that wood was put on the fire. If you didn't teach your daughter to sew, if you didn't teach your son to hunt and gut his own food and store it and clean it, guess what? They died. You all follow me. Does that all make sense to you? You'd all at least go, yeah, Mark, that does make sense. Does my son need to learn to hunt today? Nope. Does my daughter really need to know how to sew all of her clothes? Nope. Does she need the same characteristics, character, hardworking, etc., self-starter to succeed in life the way God wants her to? Absolutely. So what does that mean? Let me just be very frank with you. In my opinion, it's much easier to be a country parent than a city parent. I'd be the first one to admit that. You take some little hobby farm somewhere, raise a few animals, have your kids out there, a lot better environment than the city. I'm in the city because God's called me to reach people. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for God and for His business, and there's people here He wants to reach. And my children know that, and I've explained that to them. So as a father, I had to become very creative so that I could achieve the same character qualities in my children that you would have gotten naturally in 1850. So I want to give you a few of them. There are a few that I've used. Doesn't mean you have to do it. Here's the hard thing about some of these things I'm going to tell you. You have to live them as an example to your children in order for it to have any merit. And if you don't, they aren't going to get it. So, knowing that it's challenging, knowing that I wanted my children to see us sacrifice to some degree, etc., etc., I made certain choices in my life. They are not choices that all of the rest of you in this room have to make the same way. In other words, there are many roads to Rome. You just got to get on one of them. Okay? First of all, I chose not to own a house. Secondly, I chose that my children will not have their own room. None of them have their own room. I don't have my own room. I live that example. My sons sleep in an open room in the basement. There is no privacy, literally, in our home. You can't just go somewhere in the house and sulk. It isn't possible. We don't have air conditioner, don't have a garbage disposal, don't have electric garage door, don't have a snowblower, don't have a riding mower or self-propelled mower. When my kids were little, we have lived on an acre of land. We had about 50 trees. Now we don't have quite so many because of the storms and a lot got chopped down. When the leaves would fall, I bought rakes, little cheap rakes. I sawed the rake handles off to match the size of my children. I went out there, their mother went out there. I bought little work gloves for all of them and we stayed out. And one day, one year, we had 142 33-gallon bags of leaves. When the wintertime comes and the snow flies, I went and bought wooden shovels. I cut the handles off to approximately their size so they could have leverage. I always went out with them. I set the example. Even when little Micah was 3 years old, he'd want to go out, so I'd put his little snowsuit on his boots. And what I would do is I have a driveway that will hold 8 cars. It's a lot to shovel. And so I would partition, and I would always take the biggest portion. They always saw Dad busting his butt, taking the biggest section. They would have little sections. But with little Micah, you know when you take your shovel across like this, you leave these little trails outside? That was his job, the little trails. He'd just come behind me, getting the little trail. And if it was kind of messy, it didn't matter. I wasn't a perfectionist. It wasn't like, hey, you left a little pile. It was always like, good job, Micah, good job. With a little rake, good job. When Jeremy was 10, Jeremy's not nearly as driven as I am. Micah's a lot more driven, a lot more like I am. I had him start to try to mow the lawn. And I'll never forget, Jeremy, I went out, started the lawnmower for him, checked the oil, filled the gas. And I said, now this area you're going to do. And I walked with it first, showed him how to go around a tree, showed him all the things. I started mowing when I was 7. So I figured, 10, he can do this. It was a hot day that day. It was 80 and a little humid. He's out behind us. So I go inside and I'm looking out the window. And he's pushing the lawnmower. It's not a self-propelled one, It's a power mower, but it's the kind you push. And he's pushing. And he's stopping about every 2 pushes. And he's wiping his forehead. Kathy comes. She stands behind me. She starts crying. She goes, Mark, I just can't believe you're making him do this. This is so mean. You just have a compassionate bone in your body. That was a major, major deal right there, was that thing. And I looked at her and I said, Kathy, he's got to become a man. If you don't understand that, you're going to have to trust me, okay? When he was small, you had the main influence in his life. Now he's getting older, and my responsibility to turn him into a man. And a man's got to go to work whether he's sick or not. A man's got to go to work whether he feels like it or not. And I've told my son, I said, son, here's the difference between you and your daughters. One day, you're going to have a family. If you don't make between $50,000 and $70,000 a year, you're not going to be able to take care of that family and achieve the same things that I've achieved with your family. Having your wife stay at home, having those kids taught at home, if that's what you decide to do. So you got to work. And you got to know how to work. Well, he was in Kathy. That didn't solve her problem. That particular day, she didn't use this. She stormed off, went in the bedroom, and it was not a pleasant situation. And you know what I did? Stayed strong, man. You got to stay strong. Okay? You got to stay strong. Now, you got to try to help her understand. But I knew right now, I got to help Jeremy get through this lawn. So I went out. I said, son, it's kind of hot out. Oh, Dad, my legs feel so weak. I feel so... He'd done like 4 passes of the yard, I said, okay, son. I said, just leave the lawnmower running. We got plenty of gas. Come over here, sit in the shade. And I said, I'm going to get you a big glass of lemonade, okay? Oh, all right, Dad. So I brought him the lemonade. I said, no, son, here's the plan, all right? Anytime you want to take a break, you just come over here and you sit in the shade. Do not turn the lawnmower off. And you don't come in the house till it's done. But you can come over here and sit in the shade. And I'll be checking on you. Okay, Dad. So pretty soon he did it. Now my son can do the entire yard. And it takes me 2.5 hours. He can do it in an hour. He walks so fast behind the mower, sometimes he runs behind it for fun. He goes, that's hardly even challenging anymore, Dad. It's like, oh, geez, So these are some of the tools that I used, okay? Chores. Folding clothes, mowing the lawn, cleaning the home. All the children were involved when they could first start. Like if they were 3 or 4, they could pretend like they were folding the towels. And we'd try to show them, and even if it was misfolded, who cares if a towel's misfolded? I never sat there and said, no! Now let me show you the right way, because that will exasperate your child. And the Bible says, do not exasperate your children, fathers, or you'll take the heart out of them. There's a line. The line is get them involved, but affirm their effort. You must have proper expectations. A 3-year-old can't fold the diapers perfectly, but they can try, and who cares if it's folded perfectly anyway? It doesn't mean nothing. What means something is they gave you effort and they tried. And so I was very always affirming. Sharing the rooms. I wanted them just to know that life's about sharing. I mean, hey, you're married. Most of your life you don't have your own room, isn't that right? You spend most of your life married, right? Get used to it now. We share in this family. What's yours is mine, what's ours is ours. We share. There's camaraderie together. And we work together. Can't go hide and sulk. I'm just appalled that Americans have come to the conclusion that you don't really love your kid if you don't have a 5,000 square foot home and everybody has their own room. I don't know. Did you know that in 1955, the average family was 5 or 6 with 1,000 square feet less per home than the average family of 4 has today. Something wrong with that picture, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. Paper route. They've had it now for almost 8 years. It was one that I participate in. I help them load the papers in our van, and I drive them around the route. They walk the route. I guard them and watch them. I will not let my children, I do not trust the world, I do not trust society, and I've never let my kids even ride their bike around the block. I live on Old Shakopee Road, 2 blocks from Mall of America, and I'm not an idiot. I have great-looking kids, and I will not allow them to ride their bike. I've never let my child. Again, these are gray areas that I'm talking about here now, okay? You have to make your own decisions, and I'm not going to sit back and judge you. I just know what I'm doing. I don't go, hey, Dad, I'm going out right around the block. No, you're not. I'll get you a 5-speed right around the yard, or we'll load the bikes in the car, and I'll go ride with you. But no kid of mine is riding around the block here or rollerblading, because I don't trust people. I don't trust them. Now, you know your own neighborhood. I live in a neighborhood that's a little big main street there by the mall. It's a little different. So if you know all your neighbors, that's not a problem. Their paper route, you know, they've done it. And there's many times the kids have gone, Dad, just so tired doing this paper route. Little Micah, you know, when he was seven or eight, I'd have him sit out there, fold 500 papers, put the rubber bands on, and Jesse put them in the plastic bags, and I'd divide them in half. And every morning, see, I show the children that I want to help them succeed. So every Tuesday when the papers come, Wednesday morning, I get up. I usually get up about 5 in the morning, between 5 and 5:30. And after I take my shower, I go put the blankets on the carpet so the ink doesn't get on the carpet. See, I'm teaching them to think. And then I bring the papers in from outside, and I divide them for them, and I cut the bands. And I put the plastic bags, and I put the two boxes there. I use the recycled bins for the paper out. I don't, you know, that other stuff. I just use them for a practical purpose. And so my kids, they have to sit, and your back does start to hurt when you're folding 240 papers each. They're folding and putting the pen. Dad, my back. I said, hang in there. I don't want to. Well, you're going to. And some days when they've been sick, they had to do the route anyway. But you know what I've done? I've gotten up at 5, and I've sat and folded all 500 of them for them. And it really kills my back. I always lead the way. Always set the example. And always be cheerful about it to the best of your ability. And your children will succeed with that kind of example. And they will succeed. You give them little things that they can do. Jobs. I had my kids so busy when they were going to junior college. They were going to junior college taking 14 or 15 credit hours college courses. They taught, Jeremy taught karate. They had the paper out. They were doing art, paper art for Wendy Young here. And they both had jobs at Thermo King. They had no social life. I didn't allow them to have a social life. I told my kids one day, you just trust me, one day when we plant this church together, and the rock was always in my mind then, one day you'll have a social life that'll blow your mind. You'll have the coolest friends in the world. Right now, it's not time for social life. One day you'll blossom. I'm planting you like a tulip bulb in the ground. And you know what? It started to happen. I'm running out of time to brag. But if I told you some of the things that have started to happen, they're happening at the Rock, and to see my kids do some of the things they're doing, sometimes I just stand back in the back of the service and cry before I go up. I just cannot. It's unbelievable to see what God is doing through all these young people. But particularly to watch my own kids and be able to do this with them is a dream. But I drove them, and I worked them, and I kept them focused. And I believe that was my job. I don't have time to go over more. I got to let you go. I'll do this, I don't know when. I really don't. The points are the other tools. Maybe I'll go over them later. You just got to figure out what kind of tools you might want to use, what kind of sports you want your kids to be involved in. I picked karate for a very specific reason. If you ever want to know, you can ask me. But you can use any sport. You can use raising animals in your backyard. You can use music lessons. You can use fishing, boating, camping, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts. I didn't use any of those, but you could. Pick your battle and win it.